Yeah, now, stand and cheer for your Talking Basketball Podcast. Welcome back to this episode. This is the second part of a doubleheader. If you haven't heard the first, go back and listen to it. If you can't be bothered, that's all right. Just keep listening to this one, and hopefully you enjoy it. And don't forget, like and subscribe. I hate it when people say that. So, Craig, you've got a lot of experience then now with courts. You've got your own court. So, I guess the storage and all of that, putting it together, taking it apart. So, you've got a lot of experience. So, as far as the BBL, is there like a court crew for that? Is it the same crew or does that change all the time?
Yeah, I mean, there is a court crew that have been working together now since I've been there. There's been the odd one or two that's come in or left in between, but ultimately there's the same 6 to 8 people that do the build and do the, you know, run the court side of the events. And we're still going strong now, yeah.
Yeah. And is that all from like the Olympics or like kind of coming together, or is it some before, some after?
So I was introduced. So one of the guys who I was working with at the Olympics was already part of the BBL crew. And he was the one that said, oh, you know, maybe we'll try and get you on board and help out with the BBL stuff. And then the next thing I knew, I was being invited to go and help with it. And that's where I met all the rest of them, who we're like a big family now. They're my second family, without a doubt. And a lot of them will come down and help run my event as well. They'll work on the Bridport 3-on-3. They'll work on the Bournemouth Sevens Festival, which I'm running as well. So we're like a big family. We love getting together every year and doing these events together.
I only smile when you said that. I was just thinking, he's like, yeah, Craig, you can come and join the BBL team. Like, and then he went, all I need is that signed Durant top.
I've still got that. It's on my wall.
Is it framed? Is it?
It is framed. Yeah.
Oh, that's very cool. Oh, you have to send me a picture and I'll show Mark. That is really cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Who is, out of all the players you met at the Olympics, who is your favorite player like to watch in the Olympics? I mean, you had the iconic, the States taking on Spain, and you would have seen that, like, very close. So, I mean, you were courtside, I guess, weren't you?
So, for the gold medal game, so we didn't find out until the day before whether we would be working the gold medal game, because they were hand-selecting those players. And I got the call the night before and said, we'd like you to work the gold medal game. This is your position. This is where you're going to be for that game. And I was just like, it was, I was floor wiper. So I had to go under the basket and all I had to do was pick up LeBron's sweat every time he hit the floor. So it was, I had like one of the best,
Seats. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved every second of it. So yeah, that was pretty cool. That was good. But my best player during the Olympics was probably Kevin Durant. That's the whole reason I went and bought his jersey, you know, before the finals, because I thought he was the one that I could see becoming a potential big star. And I just loved his gameplay. I liked everything about him at that time. It was brilliant. Bearing in mind, there was a lot of people there that, you know, I was idolizing through anyway. I did really enjoy it. I got to speak to a couple players from different teams, and Patty Mills from Australia. I actually met in the shopping centre in London, in Stratford, Westfields. I was on a lunch break, went across there to get some food. He was walking through the shopping centre, so stopped and had a chat with him. It was great. But probably one of the best experiences for me was one of the training days, where we were, you know, we weren't just always at the basketball arena or the O2 arena at the time for the games. We were posted to training venues for the teams to train as well. And there was one day I was asked to go to a training venue at Lee Valley, and Spain were due to be there for the training, but wow. USA were actually playing in a game, and pretty much the entire Spanish team went to watch the USA game, so they weren't going to the training session. But we still had to go there just in case someone turned up. And one player turned up, it was Serge Ibaka. He turned up just to literally get shots up the whole time. And because it was just him, it was just me there, I literally just took my radio off, took my lanyard off, and I just stood under the basket and just kept rebounding for him for about an hour and a half. It was
really
my element. really nice guy, really respectful and humble. You know, shook my hand, had a little, you know, 5-10 minute chat afterwards. Really great, really good experience. So he's up there for me because he was just such a humble, you know, nice guy.
That's so
and
cool.
Also he would have appreciated someone's getting the ball for me and giving me the opportunity to consistently shoot for an hour and a half. And I guess I'm just thinking of what my mentality would have been. I'd have been like, yeah, that's an assist to Serge. There you go. That'd been great. Oh man, it's like memories you can just like, that some people dream about passing the ball to an NBA player and you're just on the court with them.
Yeah, I've got one picture. Which I've got, it was put on Facebook, which I look at constantly all the time to remind myself that it happened. But I was under the basket sweeping, you know, in the key, and I had the Team USA behind me. You had LeBron, Kobe, Tyson Chandler, Kevin Durant. They were all walking on the court at the time while I was on. So I was literally on the court with them, and I'll never forget that moment because it's caught on a photo. But yeah, it was surreal for a basketball fan, you know, to be involved and to be that up and close to and personal with a lot of your big idols was crazy. But yeah,
you need to get that picture, frame it, and put it next to the Durant jersey.
The quality's not good enough. It was taken on like a Nokia or something.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it was definitely surreal. I really enjoyed it, and I've got those memories.
So. Yeah, and I mean, when we actually talk about the basketball at the Olympics, I mean, it is a fairly short period, isn't it? I mean, we're talking what, three, four weeks? Are we talking about?
Yeah.
3 weeks, yeah, and then
three weeks.
Paralympics afterwards.
Yeah. Okay, so and in that period, like, you know, you've worked hard enough and had the right attitude and professionalism that they've gone, come and join the BBL crew and go from there. So, at what point did it turn into you're looking at the entertainment side? Because off the court, that is arguably one of the most integral parts. Because it's a huge part of bringing supporters and fans into the game and then getting them to come back.
Yeah. So I think over the years, since 2012, 2013 really was when I got introduced to working at the BBL finals events. And from then to now, it's been progressively developing in the way of the professionalism, getting bigger and better, getting more fans involved, and they're putting on a better show every year because they're learning from it. And I think as the years went on, we realized as a crew that we couldn't just be doing everything together. We had to have like managers or departments where you had to be in control of. And I was just given the opportunity to take that role on, and I just went for it. Anything's a challenge. I love challenges, and I thought I'm just going to give it a go. I've never been someone who likes to be very vocal on radios and bits and pieces, but I was kind of almost forced into it with that role because you have you're a link that is, you know, essential in regards to the whole thing operating correctly. I was just given an opportunity and I went for it, and I'm stuck there. I'm doing that role every year at the moment.
That's great. But you need to know what everyone's doing as well. I need to almost like the conductor of who's going, you know, like you said earlier, you know, with Matt Morgan. No, Matt, you can't come out yet. Something's happened, bam, go. It's almost that conductor role, isn't it? So how many people you are, like, you got your headset on, your mic and stuff, how many people you actually got
communicating
all at one point?
So there's about six of us on the radios that are communicating literally every second throughout the whole event, making sure everybody knows what the next thing is and everybody's in place for it. I'd say there's six of us courtside, and then you've got maybe four that are back of house as well. And then outside of the radios, then you've got a few other volunteers that are going to be helping alongside you. So you're giving directions. For me, like at the entertainment tunnel, I'll have two or three people working with me there, where I can be going, you know, we need London Lions out the changing room in 3 minutes, go and knock on the door, go and tell them they've got 1 minute just to get them out nice and quick, you know. And it's all this, you know, it's just, you know, making sure everybody's in the same place at the right time.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. So someone has to say 3 minutes to each team.
Well,
and then at a certain point, they now go kind of thing.
There's a production schedule that everybody will get that's involved with it, so they know what times they need to be at what time. So it's normally it's not too difficult to be able to get some of the teams out, but depending on how the game's going, depending on the coaches and everything else, you've got to be making sure that they are there. And it's quite often, certainly half time is probably the biggest thing. So the teams go off, they've had a few interviews, they've gone off to the changing rooms. I'm then concentrating on halftime shows. So we'll have, you know, various singing artists come on, or the cheerleaders, the dancers, the mascot, t-shirt cannons, inflatable balls. There's all sorts of things that go on at halftime. And while all that's happening and I'm trying to make sure that that's all running schedule, I'm still going, I need to make sure this team comes out ready for the start of the second half. And I'm clock watching the whole time, making sure if they're not here within 30 seconds, I've got to go and knock on that door. I've got to go and make sure that they're coming out. So I like to prepare for that, and I go and tell them anyway. I'll give them 3 minutes warning before that time to say, you've got 3 minutes and then I'm expecting you there, because at least then it's in their mind as well. And I'm not having to run around panicking in the last seconds while I'm trying to organize everything else.
Would you ever have a moment where you get both teams in the tunnel waiting to go out? Would that ever happen? Almost like like what you get at a football intro.
Every time. I will have both teams there waiting. I'll have the dancers there with the team flags, you know, or the mascot will be there maybe leading the way when he's there. There's all sorts of things happening ready, and they're all back there behind the curtain waiting to go until I can give them the okay to go through that curtain.
That would be a great moment to have a camera for Sky Sports, because there must be some banter going on between there. You know, you're going to have teams that where there's, you know, GB players say, hey, how you doing, stuff like that, but there's also going to be players who are clashing heads. That would be great to have that on camera as it's coming out, like you do in the Premier League or in the Championships, where you just see that a bit of argy bargy and then they're out on the court, and then that kind of makes sense when you get it on the court.
There's definitely been a few moments where, you know, you've seen players from different teams getting on like their best friends, you know, behind that curtain there. You know, you can see that they're, you know, they socialize maybe outside of basketball or something, because the way they talk to each other and the way they're communicating. There's definitely a lot of that goes on. Not so much, I think, when you find, you know, when they go into game mode, they become professional, they're sticking with their team, they're not communicating with the other team at all. You can see the difference with it quite a lot. And it all comes down to the individuals, the teams. You know, some of the teams there, it's quite nice when we get an underdog make it to a finals, because it's almost like having to teach them all how to do it again, because they're unaware of the process that's involved with being in the finals. And it's quite often my responsibility to tell them how they enter the court. Are they running? Are they walking? Where they've got to go? What they're going to do when they get there? It's all part of the process that I have to make sure that they're ready for.
Craig, I have one question. You may be the man to answer it. And me and Mark couldn't work it out. Mark had a view on it, but we weren't sure. So in the BBL trophy final, where you had Cheshire versus the Lions, and Cheshire won, and it was who won MVP? Rideau.
Yeah.
Rideau won MVP. That trophy he got, that ball trophy, did you get anywhere near that?
So the MVP...
Is that an actual ball, or is that glass, or is it resin?
Molten gold ball. It's actually a ball, yeah.
Oh, right. And is it like... I'm trying to work out on the scale where that would be on a shelf kind of thing. Like, is it like as the most perfect ball you would kind of visualize, or is it something like, would it be like a plasticky one? I don't mean to say it like that, but do you know what I mean? Because we were looking at it going, is that a resin?
Yeah, no, it's designed to be a ball that you can use. It's pumped with air. It's, you know, like a leather type feel. It's a shiny metallic leather though, so not great for grip, not great for playing with. Not even sure whether the weight of it is correct, you know. But I have seen
them look good on your shelf.
In the British Basketball League All-Stars event that wasn't that long ago, they used those golden balls for the three-point contest, for the bonus ball at the end. The players to use that to shoot the three-point shots with. So it can be used, but yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. It is a trophy.
And just talking about the communication and people in the team, I don't know if it's one individual. I'm just trying to visualize Portsmouth Force, how we do it and stuff like that. But you've got, I guess, one guy, maybe two guys who are doing all the actual music and sound effects during the game.
Yeah. They've got, they've got two different tables, actually. You've got one up high level up on the concourse. Running the graphics for the screens and bits and pieces and all the sound boards that goes on throughout the game. And then courtside, along the table officials area, you've got an MC and a DJ there. So the MC will be doing commentating and bits and pieces. DJ will be on there, making sure the music's on at the right time. So, you know, through the timeouts when the dancers come on, making sure their plays are on time and bits and pieces like that.
And do you get to enjoy it ever? If that makes sense, my question, because you're clearly so busy when you're doing stuff, do you ever get like to sit there and go, I can actually take this in and enjoy it?
So throughout the course of the games, I get to see maybe 1 minute of a game, something like, you know, it's not often I have enough time to be able to just stand there and watch a bit of it. Normally the best bit, when, you know, before the final whistle goes, is normally when I've got that second to just go, look at what we've created, look at this atmosphere, you know. That's the moment then. And then as soon as that final whistle goes, I'm busy again, because I'm having to get all the, you know, the presentation area ready on court and make sure the teams are in place and all sorts of bits. But normally after all of that, when the presentation's done and the MC said thanks to the spectators and they're all starting to leave, at that moment there, the headset comes off and we just sort of gather on court as a crew, and we have a crew photo on the court with all the confetti, you know. And it's at that moment, I think that's when you go, whew, you know, it's your moment of going, yeah, I've helped make this happen. It's a big moment. It's a great sense of achievement after all the hard work.
That it definitely sounds, the way you're describing it, like it's like a nice, I've created this. Would you ever one point go, I wouldn't mind just watching the game? I'm watching the game once. The only reason I ask that question is because I do it for the Force. Sometimes I say to Mark, I'll be like, I just want to watch the game sometimes, because you're so in every play and, or you're so focused on certain things that you almost look at the game a little differently. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm a basketball fan, so I'd love to sit there and watch the game. I think my time will come. The way I look at it is, you know, at some stage I will pass this baton on to someone else and let them take control of this, and our crew will eventually, you know, become a different crew, and then we'll be sat there watching the game, watching how it's run, watching the entertainment tunnel, and you know, yeah, I think I'm just waiting for my time to come for that. I'll cross that bridge when I get there. But I feel like the sense of achievement, everything I get out of it, being involved, is more what I'm looking for right now than sitting there watching the game. I feel like, yeah, you know, I'm giving back. I'm letting other people do that.
It's almost like I don't know why I've never thought of it like this before, but it's almost like a third game within the game. So when I looked at referees, the referees are playing. So you got the players playing, and then you got the referees doing like another game. If you're not, they're officiating it, but they're standing in certain places. So there's almost another level there of what they're doing. I never even thought, like, there's another level of that that's going all throughout the game. Is right, make sure this billboard comes up at this certain point, make sure this all comes in. That, yeah, it's like levels within the game, isn't it? That constantly, yeah, going.
Absolutely, yeah. I think you're there to do a job, and you're there to not be seen. So, you know, no one else will ever really think of it that way. But to the likes, you know, we've got one guy during the All-Star event that's just happened. We had one guy who was part of our crew, and he went and sat up on the concourse. And every time there was a good three-point shot or a good dunk, he would radio through dunk or three-point, and then it would go to the soundboard and it would come up on the screens. And his job was to call those moments out. And
that's, you know, pretty cool.
There's lots of different aspects to what's involved to make the event happen, and there's lots of little parts that all join together, and that's formed by that, you know, that crew that make it happen, really.
You guys are the unsung heroes for the spectator, really, where the spectator's going and getting this game of basketball surrounded by this fantastic show, and you're that, or you and the crew are those unspoken heroes that are all contributing to that experience, where they go, wow, that was a great, they walk out, go, that was a great game of basketball, but it's so much more.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a small minority of people who will understand that as well, but in a selfish kind of way, I do it for my own reasons. I want to be able to give back to basketball. I want to see the British Basketball League grow. I want to see basketball grow in this country. And I don't like taking credit for anything like that. I know as a crew, we put on the show, we make it happen. There's a crew backstage as well, which is another thing that makes it happen. But yeah, I think ultimately not many people will see that and will know that, because like you say, they're turning up to watch a basketball game, they see a basketball game. But from an events point of view, we put on an event. It's not just a basketball game, it's a whole show. And that's what we want to do. We want to create that atmosphere.
I literally have written down on my notepad, it's a production, it's a show. Because everything you've been talking about is a whole orchestrated event, and there's timings, multiple personalities, there's multiple things going on. And, you know, that's why one of the reasons we like doing these shows, because most people just see the end product, and that is the game and the experience. They just see that portion of it. They don't see either side, and then they don't see everything that's going on around, so that you have that experience.
Yeah.
I love that word, production, by the way. I love that. That is probably the best word. We've had event before, but production is, I think, my new favorite word for
that. Yeah, the way you said that, that is 100%.
Like actors are coming in. Not that they're acting, but you know what I mean, yeah. Mm. Sorry, Craig, I interrupted you.
You're good. I was going to say that if you know, if the crowd's gone home and gone, that was a great game, or what a great day of basketball that was, and they don't talk about the production side of it, they don't talk about what's happened around the, you know, the sides of the court, then you know you've done your job well, because you're meant to be blending into the background. You're not meant to be the ones on show. You're putting the court on show. So as long as it continues like that, we know we're doing the right thing, and we're making it happen the correct way.
And Craig, look, we got to bring this up. We brought it up briefly at the start. Is, you know, your personal basketball playing days, that you're going at the European Championships for the FIMBA GB Masters over 40. So that's got to feel special.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I started playing basketball when I was 8 years old. So it's been quite a while now. And as a kid, you know, the ultimate dream for a basketball fan was to represent your country, right? So to be able to put on a GB jersey, massive, absolutely massive. I think it's taken 30 odd years to get there, but I'm there, you know, and I feel like once I get that jersey on, I will almost feel like I've completed basketball, if that makes sense. It'll feel like, you know, the top, there's, you know, I've made it, I've done my bit. So yeah, playing wise, and I'll always play as long as I can, as long as my body lets me, I'm going to continue. So I do a lot of local league stuff, you know, I've got a club with seven teams in it now. So it keeps me busy, keeps me motivated. But to be on a personal level, to be still trying to play and compete at a good level for my age, I'm over the moon. Yeah, still loving it, every second of it.
And what number are you putting on the GB jersey?
not number 5, which I've been my whole life of basketball.
Mark, he's got a tattoo on his leg. With number 5.
Oh, I have, no. You couldn't show them the tattoo, get them to sway their choice.
Just put the other number on the other leg, Craig.
Yeah, could do that. Yeah. No, I'll be representing the number 1 for GB.
Well, that's good, because you're an Orlando Magic fan, and we know you like Penny Hardaway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Penny. When I was 8 years. This is what got me into basketball. My parents took me to Florida. They shoved me at a basketball game to get rid of me for a couple of hours. And little did they know what would happen from there. But yeah, that was, I got to watch Shaq and Penny playing. They're the ones that inspired me. You know, they put on a show or a production in Orlando, and it got me loving the sport. And Penny Hardaway was ultimately the inspiration to me. So to play in number 1, to me, you know, that's paying homage to one of my biggest idols. Yeah.
And so you're going to get the jersey on, but you also you need to get at least a point. That'll be a great moment, isn't it? You get your first basket and go, boom, done. There you go. For me, that would be the tick. Like, tick, I scored, done.
Absolutely. To put the jersey on is one thing, and, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm going to love that moment, just to be able to put the jersey on with Great Britain written on it, with my name on the back. It still feels a bit surreal, but yeah, to get a basket, to score some points for Great Britain, obviously another big bonus if that happens, but, you know, we'll see. The European Championships in Italy are in June, and I'm training as many hours as I can at the moment to make sure that I'm ready and to be able to get that opportunity to perform.
That'd be good. That will be good. Just to get down there and just, you've ticked that box, like you say.
Yeah. I can't wait. I think it's one of those achievements that I will never forget, I think. Hopefully, the other thing for me as well, you know, because of where I live, I'm not saying it's any different anywhere else, but down here in Dorset, basketball's very, very small. It's very difficult to be an inspiration to anybody down here because it's so small. And it's taken me years to be able to grow the club to a point where we've got junior basketball happening, you know. And for me now to be able to go to those juniors within the club or around the area and say, look, anything's possible. It's taken me 30 years to get there, but I'm playing for my country and I live here in Dorset. It's not like I'm in the capital. I'm not in a city anywhere. That's a big thing for me, to be able to be a role model for others. And I feel like this is a step to say, you know, that it can be done.
Craig, you need to turn up to those junior sessions full kit. Full GB kit, tracksuit, and you got to walk into that changing room, not changing room, walk in onto that court, rip the sweats off. you got the shorts underneath, take the top on, go, right, there you go, let's go.
Union Jack in hand. Yeah.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Hey, you'll have that Union Jack in hand when you're in Italy, that's for sure. I got to apologise, Craig, because I have stitched you up. I do like to give our guests a bit of a heads up with questions Mark has at the end, because it's such a hard question. I completely forgot. I did the exact same thing for Steve Nelson. He did all right with it, though. So
He did all right, Andrew. He definitely did all right.
I feel like I should be worried about this.
No, because you've been an avid listener, Craig. Obviously, you've listened to all of them, so you know what's coming. The first question, obviously.
We have actually probably had this. I think we've had this conversation as well about
if you're clutch,
what Marston will ask you.
It's going to be clutch. Who's the person? And it could be anyone, NBA, FIBA, someone you've played with. You've got that clutch. You know, I'm going to pass on that ball. They're hitting that shot, and that's the game winner. And it doesn't matter if it's a three, a two, a dunk, whatever. It doesn't matter. Who's it going to?
Cool. And it could be old player, new player, anyone. That is a big question.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna have to stick with Penny Hardaway though.
Penny. That's, nice. That's clutch. Yeah, that's for sure. That's clutch.
The reason I'll say that is, for one, I would just love to be on the court with him anyway. To give him the ball, I'd be happy just to be there and be present for that. I wouldn't care if we lost the game because he missed it.
It would be that Serge Ibaka moment, yeah. Except you're feeding Penny. Except, yeah, all right, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, Penny, that's a new one. We haven't had Penny yet, have we, Paul? I don't believe we've had Penny yet.
I think it's been brought up in conversation.
Yeah,
your next part, but not for the all time.
Yeah,
the all time. I think there are probably maybe four or five on that list now. But we've been talking. I think we might even had a couple of messages come in about doing a, I don't know what you would call it, a Penny and Magic podcast about the whole, because we've done a couple of historic episodes, haven't we, where we talked about the Showtime Lakers and the Bad Boys, and you know, there was a few requests for a Penny and Magic and the relationship they had. I know there's a couple of shows out there, so we might end up doing that one. But
and
yeah,
even
Mark,
Penny,
we need a jingle for this.
I know
this
we do.
Question.
I know,
like a
I'll work
bam, 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 bam.
That will bam, not bam. That will not be the jingle.
Something like that. We need, hey, look, any listeners, please come up with a jingle for Five and Pine.
Yeah, absolutely. So you got to pick your Five and Pine. It's going to be any person that you can think of, any basketball player. Five starting, one's on the bench. And you get to pick them. And that, you know, go for it. Whoever you want, it could be your favorite team that you want to play. So we've had some people, for context, put it as, they put themselves in and said, this is the five people I'd ever want to play with. And they've had people they've known or played with and some famous people. Others have gone with, this is the ultimate my five. Or it could be, I think this would be the best team ever. So you frame it how you want, but you get five and one.
Okay.
I think I know three of these names he's going to say.
Role models are going to come into that quite a bit. And Shaquille O'Neal, 100% will be in there for me. Michael Jordan, you know, ultimately, for me, was always the GOAT growing up. So definitely put him in there. Kevin Durant was one of my big idols when I got to, you know, be live around them. So that was, he'd definitely be in there. One that probably might surprise you a little bit, Andre Kirilenko. I would say put him in there. I loved his game. I thought there was something different about him that I could relate to. I just liked the fact he was a different personality on court, and surprised you with different things every now and again. I thought he had the shock factor for certain players. So I'll put him in there, actually. He's always one that's always been, you know, in my mind as a player. How many is that for?
That's four. Shaq, MJ, KD, and Kirilenko.
Only one of the ones that I thought you were going to do so far.
Yeah, because you're thinking Magic players, I should imagine.
No. I don't want to say it because I don't want to put them in your mind, but Durant was one of them.
One more. I'm going to go Paolo Banchero. For me, he's brought a new life in.
Right up to present.
Yeah. For me, he's changed. He's brought the club back to where it needs to be, and he's become that superstar Orlando's been looking for several years now. So yeah. I like him as a player. I think he's got a lot of talent there, and he's growing perfectly. So
yeah, he's definitely become their superstar, hasn't he? Because you know you've had some great players. There's been brilliant players, and Jonathan Isaac's still probably the best defensive player in the league at the moment, by hands down. But yeah, Paolo's taking it on his shoulders, isn't he? A bit like T-Mac.
Yeah, absolutely.
That same sort of thing. I don't think you saw it with Dwight Howard. I know some people would argue, but I don't think he was a leader. And that was his downfall. And he was a bit, you know, childish in some things, but that was his downfall, whereas Paolo's shouldering it and he's taking it on for sure.
Yeah, I think the thing with Dwight Howard was, you know, he played a position and he played it really well, but he was just playing that position. For me, Paolo, you know, he's got a mixed bag of different options. He can be your shooter. He can be the guy inside. He's got the physique and the height to be able to be a bit of a hybrid player. And yeah, I think he's just got a lot more to give to that team. Than the likes of Dwight Howard did, but yeah, for me, you know, I watch their games religiously now. It excites me seeing that team. They're all young, they've got a lot of development to go through, but they're an exciting team. So
definitely, wow. Yeah. Okay, so Paolo, and then who's on the bench? Who's on the pine?
This is someone completely different out of that five.
Yeah, someone completely. So you got your five. There, you're starting five. Who's on the bench?
Who's on that bench?
And I always like to remind people that in my five, I put Jordan on the bench purely because he'd be so angry when he got in.
That is a great choice. I love that choice. That Jordan's just. I think the word you use would be seething.
Yeah, he would be seething.
That's what I liked about what you said.
And I would actually nominate Paul as being the person to tell Jordan that he was the one who was going to be sitting on the bench, just because that would result in something horrific happening. You just imagine being the coach going, "Oh, no, you're not on the court. You're sat down there, mate."
I think someone that would be quite exciting and probably wouldn't be too happy about being on the bench, actually. But Dennis Rodman is who I'd go for, I think.
Nice.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm down for that. That'd be interesting. So how do you think that would work as a team then?
It would be a disaster, I reckon.
Yeah, that'd be a really interesting team to watch for sure.
Well, the ones I thought you were going to put in were Kobe and Serge Ibaka, based on your experience at the Olympics. They're the ones I thought you would go to. But that's great. Yeah. Great five and pine.
And a penny.
Kobe ruined my atmosphere with him, if I'm honest with you, because the opportunity I had to just be able to talk to him, he really fobbed me off and just went, "Not now," and walked off. And I was like, "Ah, that's just ruined all of that." So, so he lost one fan there for sure. But don't get me wrong, really.
Was he just about to play a game, or
it was after? It was after a game. Yeah.
It's a real difficult one, that, isn't it? Because I completely sympathize with fans meeting certain people and you know, them getting dismissed or whatever you want to call it. But in the same breath, it's, imagine that person's been asked something and you're the 1,000th person. And if it was you and I, after the 50th person, you'd be getting a bit annoyed. They're everywhere they go. Like, they can't go anywhere. They leave their room, they're swamped. They go to their car, they're swamped. They go to a court, they're swamped. The only time they get peace and quiet is when they're in a hotel room or And that's the only thing I sometimes, when I hear about those things, I wonder if it was just that, you know what, he's under getting so much all the time. But yes, I know what you're saying, because I had it with Ricky Gervais. See, I really like Ricky Gervais, and I met him and he was a bit of an ass. And I was an inconvenience to him, and that just made me go, all right, okay, if I'm an inconvenience just because I wanted your autograph, okay, it just became a little sour after that.
Yeah. I think for me as well, I'd had such a lot of good experiences with other players, other role models that were at the Olympics. I think maybe my expectations were probably higher than I think they should have been, and expected more. But,
you say that. I think that was great what you experienced, because, you know, obviously rest him and his daughter and everyone. But post Kobe's career, everyone looked back on him and was, you know, talking about how, you know, he's a great player and everything like that. But during his career, a lot of people said he was a bit of an a-hole, and he was, because he was such a furious competitor, and he would even call out his team, and like he went and famously sent the kit equipment people back to the locker room and got the team to rip all the Kobe's out of all their lockers, and was like, you're not worthy of wearing my shoes, you play terribly. Like, he was savage.
Wow.
So the fact that you actually got to meet the guy who was kind of dismissive, you go, oh, you got to meet that Kobe. And I think that's cool, actually, because not many, you know, unless you were a player or in that, as close as you were then, no one saw that. They saw polished, and they saw the person who was after the game, who was very considered, very articulate, and that you didn't get to see that. You got the guy with game face on who, you know, and Paul said it before about, when it was at the Olympics with Pau Gasol, when he just went, I'm going through him, and just took his head off. You saw that person. So I think actually you had a better experience than a lot of people. Because
Kobe could have done that to you. He said, get out of here. He's like, get out of here. He could have had that moment.
I got
that'd
stomped
good,
by Kobe. But, you know, that's the... You want to be like, yeah, great, let's have a high five. But at the same time, you got to see that person. And most people have never been that close. I know we saw in the tunnel when we saw people going past, you're like, oh, wow, okay, it's pretty cool. And they're just magic players. It's not Kobe who is he'll have a legacy for life in the NBA. So seeing players like that, and I'd imagine, was Paul Pierce? Not Paul Pierce. Chris Paul would have been there as well, and that sort of time.
Yeah, Chris Paul was there.
Carmelo Anthony probably kicking around, as well as LeBron, obviously.
James Harden. There were a lot of the big players. It was crazy time. But yeah, don't get me wrong. Very, very fortunate, very grateful to be in those positions at the right time, I guess.
I mean, Chris, if this is not just an advert for, like Paul said earlier, just running with it and just accepting opportunities when it comes your way. I mean, you got that opportunity from playing local ball, and it's like, hey, do you want to come and help with the Olympics? Next minute you're doing all that. Next you're doing all this stuff with the BBL and setting up other courts, and I'm sure you've got loads of other things going. And you just happen to have a container with your own basketball court in it as well, and with the Stolen Stars backboard and rings, and like, what? How? You know, that's pretty unique, it's fair to say.
Right. Yeah. Life stories.
Yeah.
Just go off. Mark, you've just scratched the surface in today's episode of some of these stories. But they just, we're just in the car driving, just like, every time he says something, like, what? You escorted Kobe to the toilet? What? And all those things. But it's... Yeah, you got some amazing experiences. And
Craig, what's the question that we haven't asked you? What's the thing that you'd want to tell us, or something that we should know about this whole thing?
I don't know. I guess the thing for me really is where it's all started from. I'm just a regular local league basketball player. Grew up loving the sport as a child. And deep down, although I work on the big stages around the country and have had these great experiences, I think one of the things that I appreciate and respect the most is the local grassroots stuff. And like I touched on it earlier, I've got a club myself in Bridport where I live with seven teams now, four of them juniors, one women's team, two men's teams. For me, it's watching those kids get the opportunities that I didn't really have when I was that age, you know. And I just think that there's a side to me that a lot of people don't see as well, and it's that side where I'm making sure that I'm trying to give the opportunities to others, and make sure that they know that the opportunities are there.
What's the name of the club?
Bridport Evolution.
Shout out to Bridport Evolution. That's awesome. And that's really cool that you've got lots of teams growing and women's teams and everything, I'm guessing, as well.
Yeah, we've got one women's team, two men's teams, four junior teams, under 10s, 12s, 14s and 16s.
Did you say to your wife, you got home and said, love, got some news, and you're like, she's like, what? Say, you're now a coach of the ladies team.
By the way... the anniversary's cancelled. You're not reffing this year, but the good news is you're the coach.
Yeah, you're starting five. Yeah. Let's go.
She does get involved wherever I ask. It's very important to have a supportive family, I think, in these things. And she'll do the table officials. She's a qualified table official, so she does a lot of our games, our home games for us, all of them, in fact. And we'll help out wherever's needed, you know. Not afraid to get involved either.
That's Craig, I've got one last question, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to. I'm just curious. Do you have a favourite team in the BBL?
Yes, I do. Should I tell you this?
Yes, you should.
I would say my favourite team is the Plymouth Patriots.
Actually. Okay. At Riots would be happy.
Couple of reasons. I'm friends with Pat Riots, or the ex Pat Riots. I know some of the players who are there. I've got onto, you know, friendship levels with them. But I think the biggest reason is, I've done road shows for the British Basketball League where I've gone to regular season games to promote the finals events, you know, hand out leaflets and flyers and bits and pieces. So I've gone to see how all the clubs run their game day experience. And obviously being part of an event management team, I get to, you know, I'm looking at how they operate, how their production runs. It's not just about seeing the game. And for me, Plymouth Patriots, or when they were Plymouth Raiders before, they know how to put on a show. And it's a really good experience. And I think they have such a good fan base because they know how to engage the crowd and they know how to make it a good atmosphere. For me, I feel like they're the team I will be backing. I'll support them. They've always got me behind them because I want to see them do well. I want to see them succeed because I can see the hard work they put in to make it happen.
Yeah, looks like brilliant. They're going to miss the pavilions next year, that's for sure.
It does look like it, yeah.
Do you have a favourite stadium? And obviously, that's, you know, favourite team. Is there a favourite place? You mentioned O2, but around the BBL?
Yeah, so before Caledonia Gladiators, before when they were Glasgow Rocks and they played at the Emirates Arena, we held the trophy finals there as well. That by far was one of my favorite venues. I just feel like the whole atmosphere in there is brilliant. It's so enjoyable. I don't know, there's some sort of feel to it when you walk through the doors and you look at it. I don't know, just a real, real nice vibe when you walk into that place. Yeah.
Nice. So what can we expect you to be doing the next courts coming up?
So my next event will be Bournemouth Sevens, which is a big music and sports festival. I was asked to introduce basketball, 3-on-3 basketball, to that last year for the first time. And it was a success, and we're doing that again this year. So that's end of May, so end of next month. They get 30,000 people through the door at that festival. Wow. So We're right on the entrance, so we're the first thing people see as well. So it's a great event because it means we're getting lots of other athletes who do different sports actually watch basketball and see what that's about as well. So it's always a great event, that one, for me. But yeah, that's coming up. And then we've got the British Basketball League playoff finals as well in May. So I'll be doing my thing there as well.
Well, make sure you get some stickers so you can put it on the court. But you know, you didn't hear it from
stickers
us.
Stickers under the stickers.
Under the stickers. That's right. Keep it all clean. But just stick it under there. Just lovely.
But that, I'll, I mean, see what I can do.
One thing, Craig. You know, I think it really highlights more than anything all of the interviews that we ever do. One of the things, I mean, you've talked about passing the torch and those sort of things, but it's the level of volunteering, the level of time it takes in the UK, particularly, where people are putting up their own time, their own money, and a lot of effort to keep basketball going, and not just to keep it going, but to keep it thriving and to get more people involved in it. What would you like to see from basketball in the UK going forward? Just your own view on that.
Yeah, I think there's other like-minded people like myself out there who's willing to put a lot of time, a lot of work in, a lot of finance as well, you know, funding towards it, because it does come out your own pocket a lot of the time as well. And I think there's a lot of other people out there who have the same feel in that, but maybe don't have the opportunity to be able to show it. And I think what's really important is these volunteers or the like-minded people who want to get out there and help develop basketball in this country should try and work together, try and team up, try and help each other and show each other how to do it, because that's how people get to, you know, to get to make it happen, I think, is by being shown a little bit, being instructed, mentored a little bit, and just get advice, because if you work together, two heads are better than one, you know, and that's, I think, really important. And that's how I've definitely helped with regards to the 3-on-3 aspect in the summer, because I talk quite often to some of the other guys who run big 3-on-3 summer events, GG 3-on-3 in London. You know, we're talking on a weekly basis, helping each other with advice and support. And because of it, I think that's why both of our events have become really successful. And I think that is one thing I would like to see more of. I want to see people in this country helping each other and not seeing each other as competitors, helping each other and supporting each other. That'd be really important.
Yeah, definitely seems fragmented, but we're all doing, you know, it's like everyone's rowing, but we're all rowing different directions, but it's for the same reason, isn't it? It's a challenge for sure. But you know, it is great that there are so many people who are willing to do it, because it's so popular and there's so many kids who want to get involved. And you know, if you give a kid a ball, they just instantly want to go and play. They're not interested in the rules, and then they get excited about being part of a team and then see progression, and it's just so good to see. So yeah, long may that continue. Well, yeah. I am out of questions, and that doesn't happen very often. I'm looking at you, Paul, and you just look.
You got all the buttons. Normally, I'd have pressed a button.
So you good? You got no more questions? Yeah. Once Craig's gone,
no,
that's
no,
it.
No, no, no.
That's it. He's never coming back. He doesn't want to speak to us. We have a window.
Yeah.
I mean, it's.
I'll be seeing you guys at the Bridport 3-on-3 this year, anyway, right? So.
Absolutely.
Hopefully.
But that'd be really cool, because I haven't been to a 3-on-3 tournament, so that'd be really nice to see.
Yeah,
and that's the whole weekend, is it?
It's a whole weekend, yeah. So what I generally do is on the Saturday we'd do group stage games, and then on the Sunday we'd introduce all the juniors as well and the knockout stages of the men's and women's tournaments.
Amazing.
On the Saturday night in between, we'd tend to have a bit of a social gathering. I you know, where my container's kept, well, I've got a bit of an area I sort of cordon off as a campsite, and we have a bit of music, bit of food, a few games and things up there as well for the teams. They tend to camp and socialize and have a couple beverages, you know.
Sorry, I'm just laughing because for a second there my brain didn't process that, and you said where the containers kept, and I'm thinking, hang on, you're getting people camping in your garden, but no, where you're putting the container for the actual shipping. It's like, yeah. At that point your wife's like, right, we've got basketball court container, rings. I'm officiating, and now you want to get people camping in my garden. Where's the line?
Yeah, there isn't a line. As long as you keep going, you know, anything's possible.
Fantastic. Well, Craig, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us on this episode. And if you haven't listened to our other episodes, go back. We've got 92 out at the moment. 250,000 people have streamed so far. Be one of those people and stream some more. I have been Mark.
I have been Paul, and we have with us Craig, the pioneer at getting rid of badminton lines.
Thanks, guys. It's been a great experience, and I appreciate you having me on.